Hello, and welcome
to another spooky episode of Androids and Assets.
This week is Halloween, and speaking of disguises and costumes, we're talking teenage identity, guerrilla insurgency, transforming into tigers. That's right, we're talking about Animorphs. So buckle up and hold on to your eye stalks, because this wild romp through Z-Space starts now.
Hello and welcome to Androids and Assets. I'm Marshall.
And I'm Steven. And I'm freaking out today because we have a very, very special guest from one of, personally, my favorite podcasts. And I'm just kind of nerding out a lot right now. Do you care to introduce yourself?
Hello, everyone. I'm Tessa, the expert on Animorphs. And I'm here to talk I know nothing about economics, so I'm so glad I'm talking about it with you guys and not with my regular co-hosts. Because we would do a terrible job.
Well, I mean, I'm glad you're here because while I'm an Animorphs enthusiast, I'm not a scholar of the work of K.A. Applegate.
Yes.
And Grant, apparently.
Yes, no, they did write it together.
They were a team.
Yeah, but the author is K.A. Applegate all of them.
That's true.
And they went with the gender-neutral name so that boys wouldn't be turned away. So, yes, I guess I should talk about what I'm a part of. Hi, it's called The Dorkbajir Chronicles. We reread the Animorph series one book at a time and talk about it every other week. I'm the expert. We've got my co-host, Mikhail, who read the books once as a child and then had the idea for this podcast. So because of that, he does all the legwork and editing. Ha ha, sucker. And then my other co-host, Brayden, has never read the books before. So we kind of get a mix of perspectives of like someone coming at it for the first time as an adult, someone who read it fervently as a child and like has all the fond memories, and someone who read it once as a child but like wants to read it as a critical like literature person, and the rest of us don't let him. <'Cause>
Nope.
It's a great podcast. I really, really, if you have any love for the Animorphs at all, I really recommend you check it out.
No, thank you.
But today we're doing a deep dive. We're doing the deepest dive. We're asking the big questions, the hard-hitting questions about Animorphs.
Like, does Visser 3 got Benjis in his pocket?
That's right. That is actually one of the questions. So do you want to just maybe give us like a 2-minute rundown on like... on what Animorphs is.
All right, so you economic fans out there, hi, how you doing? You're going to get taught about Animorphs. It should be noted that there are going to be multiple Animorph spoilers in here because it would be really difficult to not talk about like the aliens and how they affect Earth without talking about the end game, which really doesn't get released, like, revealed until some of the final books. So in the 50s, the 1950s, there was this planet called the Yerks, and there were a bunch of slugs, and they infested these people called the Ged. And infest, I mean, they crawled in through their ears and wrapped themselves around their brains and, like, mind-controlled. And so the Geds were kind of, had almost a symbiotic relationship with the Yerks. The Geds didn't have a lot of intelligence, and so, you know, morality is, like, gray, but more on the lighter side with the Yerks controlling them. The Andalites are these blue centaur people who have scorpion tails, and they're super smart. They've got all kinds of technology. And they come across the Yerks, and they're like, aw, poor Yerks. You don't know what space is. Here, come to my spaceship and look at the stars. And the Yerks are like, well, this is a fantastic opportunity. I'm going to steal all of your spaceships and take over the whole universe. So now the Yerks have spaceships. They can multiply by 3 Yerks squishing together, fusing as one, and then splitting off into hundreds of little, like, babies, so they breed like rabbits, and they can just infest anything that has ears and a brain. So they kind of spread across the galaxy. The Andalites are chasing after them, trying to kill them because they're so embarrassed that they did such a bad thing. Oh my god, we were supposed to be the good guys. How embarrassing.
Drop the ball, Andalites.
Drop the ball a lot. Thanks, Zero. The Yerks come across Earth, and they're like, aw, damn, these people got ears. They got a brain. They don't even have spaceships. Everyone's wearing jean jackets because now it's the 90s. Let's get them. The first Yerk to find Earth and was in charge of leading the invasion started a very slow and steady sneaking mission which the current leader of the Yurk invasion of Earth, from what we know from the books, it's debated on if it's all of Earth or maybe it's just the specific part of Earth. But so that's his job, is to keep it being slow and sneaky, even though he wants to kind of just like raise laser beams and scorch the Earth and terrorize everybody and infest them all at once. The Animorphs are a group of 12-year-olds who are walking one night, and they see a spaceship with this blue centaur in it who is dying. And he's like, yo, there's aliens out there that are infesting people, and you're going to think that they're your friend, but really, they're your friend with an alien in his brain. He got yurked in the ear, and now he's a bad guy. If you touch this blue box, then any other animal that you touch, you can turn into. It's a cool power. You can use it to fight the Yurks. And now I'm going to get eaten by the Yurk big bad guy and scar you all for life. And these kids are like, okay, cool. Well, the Andalite guy said that the Andalites were fighting the Yurks, so they're going to come to Earth and they're going to beat them. And until then, we will do our best to stop the Yurks from infesting people. And that's the book series. It's great because it's got a whole bunch of like terrible violence. And it talks about like the morality of war and can you ever be a good person if you're fighting in a guerrilla band warfare and all that kind of good stuff.
Okay, yeah. So we got the Yurk invasion going on.
There's five kids?
There are five kids originally. And then in book four, they actually come across. So the alien, the first blue alien who gave them powers was Alfangar. In book four, they find Alfangar's little brother, who in Andalite years is roughly the same age as them. So there's six of them all together. So there's a team of six altogether.
I mean, that's a pretty heavy burden for that Andalite prince to drop on kids. Be like, I just need you five kids to fight a holding action for who knows how long.
But they can touch. They can become any animal they touch.
I mean, yeah, but they're still, they have undeveloped brains.
They're not fit to run an insurgency operation. One thing I think we can give, I mean, Axe is about the same age, so clearly Andalite society is perfectly fine with child soldiery.
Oh, yeah. No, Axe is like, he calls himself an Arist, which is like a space cadet. The reason why he survived when all the other Andalites that he was with above Earth died was because they sent him to the dome ship and were like, you're too young for this battle. Go to the dome ship, which is like this great big half circle ship with grass in it because the Andalites eat grass. They have no mouths. They eat through their hooves. How do they poop? We don't know yet. The dome ship, they like fart off and it falls to Earth and lands in the ocean. So that's how Axe is safe while all of his other people are dead. And so, of course, he feels super guilty about it because he was like, I was training to be a soldier. I should have been fighting with them. And it's like, dude, you're alien. You're like your year's version of a 13-year-old. It's okay that you weren't fighting.
It's something that sort of as an adult, when I look back, I'm like, why didn't he just tell them to like go find an adult and transform into an animal in front of them and be like, look, I'm not lying because I just turned into an alligator.
I mean, but like, what if that adult was a Yurk though?
Oh, shit.
That's the whole thing. You don't know who to trust. We find out in book one that Jake, the unofficial leader of the Animorphs, which he then really comes into his own at the end of the series and makes some very dark choices. But his own brother is a Yurk. Marco's mom is Visser One, the person who first found Earth and had the idea of a sneaky invasion, she then delegated to Visser Three, who, boom, boom, he's a Yurk in the body of an Andalite, so he can also morph. So he's a really big bad guy. He's also an egomaniac, power hungry, and likes killing subordinates who anger him. So he is not happy with this sneaky mission. He kind of wants to, like I said, laser it all up and just like lay waste to this land.
All right, humans, put up your dukes. let's have a straight out fight here.
Hit me with your best shot. All that, you know, all that good stuff.
Exactly. Okay, so let's talk about the purpose of the Yurk invasion. What are they hoping to get out of Earth?
I'm thinking they got so excited that they saw stars for the first time, that they saw this world out there, that they were like, hot damn, now I want to see everything. And there's too many Yurks and not enough bodies. And they're also multiplying at a large rate. And they're just kind of like high on this idea that now we have spaceships. Now we can go and infest all kinds of humans or creatures.
It's the Yurk version of Lebensraum. Well,
wow. Yeah, hey, no, you're right.
I mean, they're not good people.
If you, I don't,
living,
I mean,
living space. It's like a Nazi word. It's German. It means living space. Like,
living, okay.
Yeah, like they were invading all their neighbors to make, they were too crowded and they needed more room to live.
More room to live. So, yeah. Yeah.
Genocidal, I think that's kind connotations.
Of, well, and this, I mean, when a yerk takes over your brain, you lose all sense of power, and they were very quick to throw. Like, because so a yerk has to leave a host every 3 days to feed in this little, like, sludgy pool and soak up Cadrona rays, because they're basically, like, plants that photosynthesize when they're in this weird water. So they very quickly made cages that they could put the hosts in that were kicking and screaming, like, don't let me be infested again. It's said in book 19 when Cassie, one of the characters, has a conversation with a yerk who knows that she can morph, actually. That's one of the big secrets that they keep, is that only Andalites have this turning into other things technology. So there must be some Andalites that are attacking the Yerks then in this unspecified American town that they're fighting in. And they have a conversation where the Yerk is like, I mean, you eat meat. You humans are our meat. And the Yerk, Aftran, oh my gosh, if I forgot that name, I would lose all credibility. But Aftran is like, yo, like, we have no eyes in our yerk form. So in Aftran's defense, she's like, yeah, like, we have to survive by infesting people. I forgot where I was going with this. I just get so excited.
Well, the yerks want hosts.
Yeah, the yerks want
to extend their power.
They want to extend their power. They kind of want to, like, be everything.
So they want slaves, basically.
Yeah, and they don't even think of it as slaves. Like, they don't think of it as slaves. They just think of it as like, all right, this is now an extension of my body. I'm now a human who's, like, implanted into this robot body.
Right.
Like, but the robot has a living will of its own and is screaming and crying in the back corner of your mind.
Yeah.
You know.
You just silence that little voice in the back of your head.
And just keep on going.
I do that all the time.
They're pretty much standard. So it's standard imperialism, right? They want resources and they want labor power and military power to be expanded. And humans are one tool that they can.
Humans are the ones. It is stated in the books that at the same time as the human invasion is going on, there's an invasion on the Lyran home planet, which are aliens that look like frogs that are psychic. So they're like, these are really cool. And they want to infest those guys. There's talks about like other planets that they're fighting at. Excuse me. There's talks of other planets that they're fighting at. And so there's some kind of, it's not just the invasion of Earth that the Yerks are concerned with. They're just spreading everywhere.
So, I mean, so Stephen said it's fairly generic imperialism, which I guess there's a generic President's Choice brand of imperialism.
Just pick it up at the store. It's in the yellow box.
Imperialism.
Blah, blahs. Please do not sue us.
Imperialism. Kid tested, mother approved.
Yeah.
Right?
But when I think of generic imperialism, it's sort of like a smash and grab operation. Like,
we're coming to get you have all the wood, and I'm not going to trade you any sheep for that if I may borrow Settlers of Catan. Like, I'm just going to take all the wood.
Yeah, exactly.
And then all the clay, and then all,
like,
the bricks.
I'm going into Africa, and I'm chopping down your forests, and I'm digging up your gold, and I'm going to leave you with a barren desert. Good luck.
Yeah.
But they're coming to Earth, and it's not a standard imperialism. It's like, let's be super sneaky about this. No one will know we're here. We'll go really slow. And there's no reason for them to be super slow about it, right? So, like,
there is a little reason. They don't, it's suggested that they, I mean, I'm going to actually retract that. I was going to say it's suggested they don't have the firepower to compete against Earth in a 1v1 battle because Earth's got guns. But I think they do because Yerks have laser guns. The reason why they're going slow, though, is Visser 1, one of the, like, the first one who found Earth, realized that it is easier to take control of a host and stay in control if the host is willing to be infested. So they set up this little community center called the Sharing. They'll go out and see disenfranchised youth and young adults and children, and are like, yeah, come hang out. You got no friends? Come hang out with us. We do like community service. We got a pool table. It's all cool.
They'll build an army from the kids who smoke.
Right.
Or vape now.
Which is another question, like, how good...
It's a completely underutilized labor pool, okay?
Like, how good of a how's your invasion going? If you're just infesting 12-year-olds, like, cool, they got all the power. Okay, like, I mean, what? Internet gaming hasn't been invented yet, so you can't even make them play Fortnite. What are you doing?
Yeah, what, like, so you, what are they getting out of it? Other than adolescent hosts, they don't seem to be getting a lot of, like, material goods.
I think the hope is they infest the adolescents, who will then pressure the parents to join the sharing and come with them to meetings, and then the parents will also be infested. The reason why they want the voluntary hosts is because they're easier to control, and it's shown in book two where the hosts are actually like the humans in their brains are fighting against the Yerks, and they're like punching themselves in the face and talking jerkily and thrashing around. So obviously Yerks don't have as total of control as they thought, or they actually have to work a lot to stay in control all the time. Hmm. Like there's stories of people waking up in the middle of the night, humans taking control and warning their spouses, like, don't do this thing. And then the Yerk takes control, but they can still get that phrase out. So obviously the Yerk has to enact a bunch of control to stay in control all the time.
Get out, man. Get out.
Is it before Marco's mom, while Marco's mom is infested, Marco's mom is Visser One, and before she fakes her own death to just live as a Yerk the whole time, she wakes up in the middle of the night and warns Marco's dad, they'll never touch you if you stay away from the military. And he's always, like, the dad has always wondered, huh, that was a weird thing for my wife to say. Oh, and then she died in a tragic boating accident like 2 weeks later. So sad. I'm going to be, you
know, I'm sure they're not related.
I'm sure they're not related. They're definitely not related.
No way.
I wonder why my son is leaving the house at odd hours all the time. Not related.
Deal. See, I would have guessed that, like, if you really wanted to be super sneaky about it, wouldn't you just, like, infest some prison wardens and, like,
yeah.
And then get at the prisoners?
Yeah.
This is how I would have done it.
You just you have like, what is it
find out that androids and assets is a Yerk front. They got Hark Bajir coming. Mikhail Brayden, save me.
There's a huge untapped population of people who have no choice about their life anyway. You're just like, start with like three people and you're like, okay, well, we're going to take two prison guards and solitary confinement, and everybody comes out of solitary confinement just super happy.
Systematically rotate the population through and convert them.
Yeah.
But I think the analogy here is like more conversion by missionary. Like, they're trying to missionize the humans a little bit, and they're trying to sell them.
Yeah, they're trying to kind of sell them on, like, hey, like, if you just lose your free will, your life will be better.
Which makes sense, because missionization is the tactic of imperial powers who lack the material means to conquer their subject population. That's how why Europe's had to expand through missionization. Europeans had to expand through missionization for a long time, because they lack logistical capacity.
I think
I don't believe that at all.
Okay.
I think maybe one thing for the Yerks in particular, too, is they seem like a people that are like, all right, I have this idea and I'm just going to do it. I don't know if that's a species thing or if that's just how, if we're thinking of maybe the Yerk Empire as like a corporation that's just, you know, they're Nestle and they're taking over. And that's just kind of like their mission statement. You see on the website, they just like, all right. And it's, you know, oh, it's a book for kids. The authors are limited by what they can do, blah, 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 blah. It's more fun to think about, like, fictional reasons why these people would do it. And I think, yeah, sneaking seems to work. Kids are real easy to convince to give up their free will because the internet hasn't been invented, like, very well, and they can't just yell racial slurs over at Call of Duty. So, like, let's make them join the sharing. And, yeah, they probably just didn't even think of the prison thing.
It does feel a lot like the Yerks are just an ideological force, where it's just like, we're not doing this for economic gain. We're just doing this because this is what we believe is the thing we're supposed to do.
Like, yeah, I would agree with that. But there are some Yerks who disagree with this is what we are supposed to do. There's a thing in the series that becomes the Yerk peace movement where Yerks want to live, like, they want to coexist with humans. So they turn to the Animorphs, and there is a bit of an alliance there. They have contacts with the Yerk peace movement that's working internally to try to disrupt things.
The Yerks are not a homogeneous entity. They're not a singular consciousness.
It's debated. We debated in the Andalite Chronicles whether the Taxons were like a singular consciousness, because they have something. The Taxons are the great big centipede guys that are always hungry. And we debated whether they have a singular consciousness because they have like a hive mind queen or king that speaks almost like thought speak to people. But the Yerks for sure are their own personalities.
Okay, so moving on from sort of the purpose of the invasion, what do we see as sort of like the impact of the Yerk invasion? Like there's like Yerk Corp that comes in, they do the sharing, that's their corporation.
They
do the sharing,
and then they take over, let's say they take over the world, or maybe even just part of the world. They take over. They're going to, like, it's not, they're going to have the bare necessities there for humans. There's this godlike being called the Elemis that kind of like does whatever it wants and uses the Yerks and Animorphs as like this chess match between the devil form called Kryak. This book series is wild, y'all. But the Elemist jumps them into the future and they see, oh, cool, this is our town totally taken over. And like it's pretty much raised. They don't care about grass. They don't care about, they have like food pellets to feed the human hosts, but they're just kind of like living lives. They've got like the mall turned into this taxon hive with like taxons spiraling around these pipes. And but like it talks about how the sky is torched, the ground is torched. There's nothing, because the Yerks don't care about that kind of stuff.
It seems like poor agricultural practices.
It's not very sustainable.
It's not sustainable. But then it also makes you wonder, like, what's the Yerk aesthetic? Are they just really into this kind of weird, browny, dead earth stuff? We know from the Andalite Chronicles that their sky is like, got like, it's like from, I think it was like black with like green lightning or something in it. It's like kind of weird and like it's the Matrix planet is kind of what
which,
it is.
Which might be great for like Yerk evolution. But when it comes to, you know, raising another species, you sort of have to accept that they need sunlight or food.
Food or something.
Because like if your whole point is to have more hosts and you destroy everything that the hosts live off of, you're going to destroy your hosts.
And then also, if your whole point of having the hosts is so that you can enjoy the world, wouldn't you keep, like, keep the fun stuff? Nice.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So you can, like, look at it? Like, you know, just a bunch of dead grass isn't nice to look at.
The other thing I guess we could say is perhaps there was a, when in the final stages of the takeover, there was a war and the humans nuked it.
Yeah, that's definitely a possibility.
And then it's all kind of screwed over.
But just in when you're talking about like taking care of hosts, you got to think that Yerks have in the 60s, one of the reasons why the Yerks were able to spread so quickly, they stole the Analyte technology and then they found a planet full of things called Hork-Bajir. Hork-Bajir got great big ear canals. They're not super smart, so they're easy to control all the time, because after you've beaten them up, they'll kind of like lie there and like whimper. And they eat bark. That's their big thing. They're great big lizard monsters covered in blades, and they use those blades to carve bark off of trees and eat it. How are the Yerks supporting all of the hundreds of thousands of Hork-Bajir that they have on their Yerk ships? Like, do they make bark?
They just fly around in big forest ships.
But this is why, I mean, we've settled that that Andalite or like Animorphs Town USA is in California, right?
It's in California.
So they're there for the redwoods.
Which is actually, it's a cute moment in the last book. All of the Hork-Bajir that are free get released in the redwoods to help take care of them. And it's like, and then people will go and visit the redwoods to try to see the Hork-Bajir. And it's like, aw, that's cute.
So the Yerk, they're basically franchises then. The Yerks basically went out from the home world and they gave people ships and like colonize this part.
Yeah,
big old tub of Yerks.
Yeah,
go over there, put them in people, and
which
move
is
on.
Funny because Visser One is like kind of on Earth, like she's there often enough. I know she has talked about being other places, but she's also there. Visser Three is clearly right there in the Animorphs' faces all the time. So maybe he just has like, maybe he's just in control of the Yerk operation in this one town or like this one state. Visser 2.
K.A. Applegate, give us an org chart.
I want an org chart.
I want a Yerk org chart.
That would be great. Because we have the Council of 13. We have the Vissers, which go from 1 to at least 4, we know, maybe a couple more. And then we have sub-Vissers, which we don't know who those relate to or what that means. And then we have regular Yerks. And we don't know, like, can you be, like, just, like, a general or something? At least the Andalites we know a little bit more, because we have War Prince, and then we have Prince, and then we have Arist. We don't know. I don't know how the Andalites are ruled. I don't have that memorized.
Well, they seem to have some segregation between their military and their civilian government. Whereas I don't think the Yerks
are just all military.
Yeah.
That's as soon as you're born, you're like part of the military, and if you're not, then you're gonna like you're gonna get put in a little toothpick cage. Yeah.
Russian.
So okay, do the Yerks need money?
They do, because the sharing is a physical location. and the Yurks have to infest humans and still act exactly like these humans, maybe making subtle changes, but they can't just suddenly be like, all right, honey bear, I'm going to like withdraw all of our investments and like buy this community hall and call the sharing. Like they have to do it kind of sneakily in ways that make sense for their human counterparts so that nobody suspects. They're not just like the Chi, which are the android people that look like dogs. They're the reason why dogs exist in this world.
Right, but the Yurks need money because they need to maintain actually a very expensive physical infrastructure.
To feed
the Yurks when they're not in their hosts and to maintain their hosts while they're out of.
They have this whole underground expanse. There's like, they talked about having earth movers down there. You got to rent a cat, right? You got to put it there.
So they need just good old American dollars. So they're running some like very successful corporation then.
I'm thinking everyone who is a Yurk just siphons like any parent who's a Yurk. Just like, yeah, must do something to pay in. And they probably just like
the sharing. And I'm sure they can do stuff with like, they do investment shenanigans. Like they have like, you know, they buy a put against a company and then they infiltrate the CEO of that company and then have some information leak, which will cause the stock to dive at a convenient time. And, you know, they manipulate the markets and speculate and that kind of stuff as well.
Or even because they're like,
insider trading by Yurks.
Yurk insider, which is great because the government can never prove it because it's all done through like secret Yurks.
It's true insider training because they're in your mind.
Yeah.
But also, like, they're a nonprofit, so maybe there's, like, some Yurk schmo who's just busy writing grants to the government to try to get money.
Oh, that's so good.
Doing that's the Yurk you don't know collections. About. Like, man, there's a lot of Yurk
bottle
jobs,
drives.
But, like, right? Whereas I was actually thinking about this earlier today. So the Chi are the androids, and they just, like, they've existed for, like, since caveman times. And it's assumed that they have a lot of money because they have this underground, they also have an underground park. A lot of people... underground parks. The cheese
it's
underground
a must
park.
Have accessory.
It's a must-have accessory if you're invading Earth. But their underground park is full of androids who don't want to constantly wear like a human hologram. And it's also full of stray dogs because they love dogs because that's their, you know, alien masters. But like the Chi can just become people, like just independent people. So they can just create their own wealth easily by being independent. Whereas the Yurks have to like pretend to be people, right? Like they can't just become a new person. I think that's why it's more difficult for Yurks to get the funding because they can't.
If you infest Keith, you have to keep being Keith. You can't just be like, oh, I'm going to be Ken now. And
exactly. You have to do it in such a way so that your friends don't get concerned about you, right? Like, oh, I'm going to start my new Yurk franchise. And your friends are like, wait, what's a Yurk? You're like, oh, crap, I blew it. Like, you know, you got to be sneaky. Yeah.
Right. So, and if you were a wealthy person, you have to continue spending lavishly as you would have and being sustained in the lifestyle you're accustomed to.
Yeah. Right. And then maybe slowly tweak it in a convincing way that, you know, well, all the while keeping control of the screaming human in your head. It's exhausting to be a Yurk, man.
So in essence, Visser 3 definitely has Benjamins.
Oh, he's got Benjamins. He doesn't even have pockets. He just like shoves them like on his flat horse back. There's just like a bunch of bills just lying there. But they're all ones because he doesn't know like the significance of like 100. Because all
American
money looks the same. They're all green. But he calls them Benjamins because he heard someone call them Benjamins. And so that's just what he thinks American
and Visser 3 is really a middle-aged man anyway, so even though he's like, he would totally like misread youth culture very profoundly.
Oh my god, now I'm picturing Visser 3 trying to like, doing like in human morph, going to an elementary school to like promote the sharing and try to be like, hello fellow kids.
Hello my fellow human.
Hello fellow human children.
You are normal human worm babies.
I was imagining Visser 3 with like a traveler's wallet strapped around his.
Yeah, he wears a fanny pack. You know it. Such an efficient design.
Yeah, always wears a suit. Also has a fanny pack, just full of like ones and quarters for no reason.
When you transform, how do you know what age you're going to become?
So the idea...
Because that's not a genetic thing.
No. So the headcanon idea is that you picture yourself as you are. Excuse me. So like if Rachel has her ears pierced, well, that's a wound technically, right? Wouldn't it heal after she demorphs? She pictures herself with the... It's like an idea in the fandom. It's like, okay, she obviously pictures herself with the ear holes so that she can demorph and be herself with the ear holes.
It conforms to your phenomenal sense of self.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I think that has something to do with it.
So if Jake was just like, oh yeah, I'm ripped, like, then just maybe just jacked.
Just jacked.
He transforms like back into a human and is like, he could just win bodybuilding competitions.
There's got to be some limitation. There's got to be some limitation, but like, they don't explore it enough. And like, that would have been like, they, I mean, the kids, when they first get the powers, they try morphing with clothes on and like, and find out that it doesn't work except for skin tight clothing. But like, we find out later from other Andalites that in book 38 that come to Earth, and they're just like, yo, we're just going to Q virus humans. Hope you don't care. And the Andalites or Animorphs are like, yo,
Q virus is a virus that just wipes out.
It's a Q virus, a great big virus. Yeah. You can program it to just attack a certain creature. And that's what the Andalites did to the Hork-Bajir back in the 60s during that war when they tried to stop the Yerks.
The Andalites are not good people.
They're not the good guys that were painted in the beginning. But yeah, but like, then we find out in book 38, like, there's an Andalite who Axe is like kind of getting his flirt on with, and she morphs human. Her whole form comes into a ball. Instead of being this terrible eldritch nightmare of like melting flesh and bones spurting out before they're covered in skin, she just turns into a ball, and then it kind of explodes as her human morph with clothes on. So obviously it's something that you can train to do. The kids just don't have time because, I mean, not only are they trying to save the world, they also like got to be 12-year-olds and like stay in school.
Yeah. Listen to their favorite bands.
You know, Nice is Neat and all that.
Exactly. Nice is Neat and Nine Inch Nails, yeah.
Oh, well, now you gave it away. Now you gave it away.
It's from the books.
I know, but now Cassie's mom is going to know.
Cassie's mom does listen to this podcast.
Hi, Cassie's mom.
Good for you.
Yeah, so I think we're left with kind of just like an interesting sort of thing. So like the Yerks, there are kind of two imperialistic space civilizations, the Andalites and the Yerks, and they're kind of colliding over Earth, and then these human kids kind of get put in the middle.
I mean, to be fair, we don't know for sure that the Andalites are imperialistic. Or is imperialism kind of like colonialism?
Well, they certainly want to. They want to go out into space and have an infrastructure and a capacity to control other locations in space to facilitate their further expansion.
Yeah, that's true. Okay.
So even though the Andalites, like, they set up bases on planets, like, they're like the difference between like the Mongols and the Americans. Like, you know, like the Mongols just wanted to go through and, you know, well, whatever.
I don't think there's much of a difference between the Mongols and the Americans.
But like the United States, its current mode of, or at least its 20th century mode of expansion was to, you know, build installations in different countries. And, you know, and insofar as domestic affairs did not impede their overarching agenda, they didn't. They kind of let them be.
Maybe the Andalites are sort of like Star Trek's Federation, right? Yeah. Where they're expansionary, but they also don't want to have an impact. There's like...
Yeah, they just want to view it and see it in its natural state.
Yeah, there's the Prime Directive in place, right? Where they're like, ooh, we can't interact with those people. But, I mean, they violate that just like Star Trek.
Just like Star Trek. Oh, yeah.
And that's why we have Yerks. So, I think of them sort of like expansionary without being imperialistic or intentionally imperialistic. Whereas the Yerks are, that's their ideology, is like conquer everything.
Yeah, they want to go and ranch organisms to ride on, basically.
You made that sound as dirty as possible.
Thank you.
I mean, you just said ranch, and then I started thinking about salads. So, like, you know.
and then you talked about the Yerk riding people.
Well, yeah. You want to explain a little bit more? Why would you think that's dirty, Marshall? Really break it down.
We're here on Androids and Assets Nights.
18 plus. All right. So, yeah, I think this is happening because part of the book is, I think, the historical period which it occupies. And going back to American Empire, I think we kind of actually have an interesting... But the 90s was kind of an interesting time in the sense that it was the post-Soviet era. Mm-hmm. There was this expectation that, like, kind of like, you know, American neoliberal ideology was sort of like the only thing left. You have a young Hegelian named Francis Fukuyama who wrote a very controversial book called The End of History and the Last Man. And in it he says kind of, well, you know, the grand narrative of struggle between communism and capitalism is over. There's just kind of a post-ideological pragmatism that's just going to kind of take over the world now, and we'll just gradually evolve into a homogeneous
technocratic race.
Yeah. And then, you know, like, yeah, America was on like this great big upswing and things are great and going good. And then, you know, September 2001 happened and we're like, oh, damn.
Yeah, they didn't account the Islamic grand narrative or anything like that, the fact that there maybe were people who just didn't want to be, you know,
American,
enfolded into capitalist.
You don't want to become an Andalite? What? Yeah. It's been called that, like, Andalites, like the Americans of the galaxy, absolutely. And I think it's a very fair comparison. Yeah. At least in the '90s version.
That, I mean, even with Star Trek, the Federation are the Americans and
Space America.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but in the '90s before 9/11, as you quite correctly pointed out, there's a weird anxiety in America about it. Like, it's just like, who's the enemy? Like,
yeah.
They're kind of, for the first time, without an enemy. And yeah. And I think so you kind of have, and this is why it's the time of conspiracies, like satanic panic, UFOs, you know, all these kind of things. People, it's like the heyday for it. It's in the zeitgeist. And I think Animorphs is riding that malaise as well. Like there's a secret enemy amongst us. And I think because to some extent we're finding out now, I think there kind of was. Like, there definitely was like this.
But it was America itself.
Yeah.
It was infesting our minds and taking control. But yeah, like.
But there was a business class interest that was maneuvering very aggressively for power. For like, you know, through globalization.
So the Yerks are also the Americans.
Well, let's not. The metaphor, we've departed from the metaphor at this point. But I think there was an anxiety in America at the time, and Animorphs is reflecting that. And that anxiety, although misplaced in the time, I think to some extent was kind of real, right? Like you definitely had these business oligarchs. This global consortium of business oligarchs, like, maneuvering, and they kind of came to fruition in the Bush era, with, like, Project for New American Century and, you know, all these types of things. But maybe I'm my own paranoid brain.
I think you're not wrong. This is a reflection and sort of buys into that end of history sort of idea that the kids, the Animorphs themselves seem to be reticent to sort of engage in wider collective action or engage with any like of the political process. It was like, oh yeah, but all of those people are dangerous and it's better just to go it alone and do your own thing because it's unsafe to talk to other people. It sort of, yeah, I think it encouraged kids to be like, be yourself and be good to other people, because that's what's important. Is just the kindness that you have for other people is the important thing. But wider collective action isn't important. Don't worry about that. Just like, be the best you that you can be.
That's dead, because politics amongst humans is over.
Right.
It's human to it's human civilization to alien civilization now. We don't have our own internal politics as a species anymore. We are human to Yerk, human to Andalite, and not. Oh, the only problem in human civilization is the problems caused by the action of alien actors in our midst.
That's the one thing that I've always kind of missed when reading like fantasy or like urban fantasy or urban sci-fi or that kind of, where it's like modern day us, but also there's other people, and it's like, okay, well, we're just turning like the human narrative of all of like our different political differences and bloody, and now it's like, all right, well, now humans are no longer racist, we're just racist towards orcs or something,
right
yeah. Like all the elves are like Republicans, and that's like now the new dichotomy, and it's like, instead of there being the differences between humans, and that's one thing I always wished, that there was more nuance in kind of urban fantasies, like keep humans having all of our own differences, and also have the aliens have their own differences. Don't have like, which I think Animorphs does, because we have the Yerks. We see examples of the Yerks.
To its credit, yeah. Andalites and Yerks both have complex internal politics.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it is like shown. It's not, I mean, they didn't have time. They didn't have, I mean, it was 9 to 12-year-olds that were reading these, so they weren't able to do it almost enough, but it was just a little bit. And I've been searching. I've been searching for that hit ever since.
But I don't think the humans had politics.
No, the humans didn't, no.
Yeah, no, there's no human politics because of this, supposedly post-ideological malaise.
Right. Other species can have politics and they can have conflict and everything, but we've overcome all of our conflict.
It is very briefly referenced a couple of times because, so in the book series, we got Tobias, Rachel, and Jake, who are white, Cassie is black, and Marco is Hispanic because his mom is Hispanic. We know for sure his mom is Hispanic, so he's like part Hispanic. We don't know if his dad is, but is mentioned very briefly in Megamorphs 3. They talk like a little bit. They go to, as a time travel one, and they go to like, I don't know, the 50s America, and there's a bunch of white people, and they see Cassie, and they call her the N-word. And she's already had a bad day. Jake has died, and she's like, all right, cool. Life no longer exists because he was my boyfriend, and also I hate time travel. She turns into, it's like, you want me to be white? Okay. And she turns into a polar bear and tries to eat him, and it's great. So there's that. And then like in the modern day in Megamorphs 4, before they decide to skirt the construction site, there is talk of like, because Cassie is best friends with Rachel. Rachel is Jake's cousin, and Cassie has a crush on Jake. And she asks her best friend, like, do you think Jake will have a problem with me being black? You know, like, and Rachel's like, no, of course not. Like, he's not like that. So there obviously is some kind of like racial context, but because of all the alien stuff happening, like, we don't hear any of it. But there is like kind of a little bit like, you know, like the world isn't super
racism
perfect.
Still exists
racism
in the world.
Still exists amongst humans.
Albeit predominantly in the past.
Predominantly in the past.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So I think that's for me, I think all kind of the main political and kind of economic themes I got kind of out of my tour through the Animorphs many years ago and now through reliving it with the Dorquizier Chronicles. So
yeah, I mean, it was very, very bland, sort of blasé economically. Like, yep, there's capitalism and it's fine. People have jobs. No big deal. That's how the world works.
They don't really shake it up. They don't invent a new system or anything.
No, and they don't even criticize the system that exists.
That exists, no.
Yeah. Although if Animorphs were in today, you know Bitcoin would be at your convention. Oh, you know, God. The Bitcoins came. you know the Yerkes invented the blockchain.
Would it be Yerk or would it be Kryak? The devil himself.
Bitcoin or blockchain, bro?
Well, okay, thanks very much for being here with us. I really enjoyed this. I still remember fondly my reading Animorphs. So,
well, thank you so much for having me, and thanks for thinking of really good questions to talk about.
Well, thanks for doing that with us. And one more time, your podcast
is the Dorquizier Chronicles. You can find us at collectivelegacy.org, or we're on Libsyn or iTunes or a bunch of different places, and we release episodes every Monday.
All right. And that was our conversation with Tessa, in which we discussed the young adult novel series, The Animorphs. If you enjoyed that and you want more Androids and Assets content, you can find us on Twitter at AssetDroid, or you can find us online at androidsandassets.ca. We're also on Instagram, again at AssetDroid.
Also, because, and this is not about economics, but okay, so Andalites don't have mouths. And whenever Axe morphs human, he freaks out about the taste. The idea of taste must just blow his mind. So what if Yerkes do create their own, like, one of the secret entrances is in a McDonald's. they probably chose that just because of like so much grease and salt.
And they probably own the McDonald's.
They probably own. They're literally franchising.
Sure. Yeah.
Like. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I imagine Avista 3 just has like a human who follows him around, a human controller who follows him around and stops him from eating things that would hurt him.
Would hurt him.
He takes picks up a big
butts.
Handful of tacks. It's like, no.
Cigarette
don't do that.
And motor oil. There's a point in the TV show where he's just like staring at a cracker, and it's like a second before like someone walks in and talks about the plot to him, but it's like, oh, please, I just want a Visser 3 cooking show where he's just like, all right, here we go.